Good morning. I'm Karen Garrison. I'm an alcoholic. And it's through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982. And that doesn't make me a miracle. It makes Alcoholics Anonymous a miracle. And if you're new in this room today, I want to welcome you to AA. And I always call it God's magnificent AA, the program that saved my life and it's going to save yours too, if you want to take a few quick actions. And I suggest strongly that you get a sponsor, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get busy and everybody else is doing around here, and you're going to stay sober. As I've stayed sober for 14 years, and people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. My home group is the Pacific Group in West L.A., a group I'm very, very proud to be a member of, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And I guess if you're not proud, you ought to get a job in it. You might change your mind. I certainly have a job in mind on Wednesday night, and I'm proud to have that job in. I want to thank Mike and the committee for inviting me. This is an honor and a privilege. It's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. You guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. And I think that it shows. And I make an awful lot of mistakes. And I do an awful lot of things wrong. But I'll tell you one thing, that I love you. Make no mistake about that. You know, you guys are in for some real treats this weekend. I know every single one of these speakers. And I know them very, very well and stuff. And Charlie was just fabulous last night, of course. And you're going to hear Sean tonight. And tomorrow morning, my AA sister Nancy speaking. And I had to change places here today because I screwed my airplane ticket up. I didn't know it was a Sunday morning speaker and booked a flight out of here at 11:45, so we changed places. And I asked her if she might change the place with me. And I said, you're more spiritual than I am anyway. And she said, no, Karen, not really. She said, I talk about nipples and you talk about penises. And I said, that's about as spiritual as you and I are ever going to get, I can tell you. You'll enjoy all these people. I don't know our Ellen on speaker, but I certainly plan on hearing her talk this afternoon. But I'm glad to be here today, and I'm glad to be sober. And, you know, it just amazes me. I love St. Louis, Missouri, and I did a lot of drinking over here. I'm from Nebraska originally, and a lot of memories come back whenever I come over here. They didn't have gambling boats when I was drinking, but you know what? I'm glad they didn't. I probably would be dead, you know. I've been shot on one of them. But anyway, you know, I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I wrote my big mouth, and one thing is to talk to my sponsor, and Clancy sends you his love and very best wishes. And anybody in this room is wondering why I have a man for a sponsor and why I have Clancy for a sponsor. It's really quite simple. I didn't get sober in California. I got sober in a place called Lincoln, Nebraska, which I used to think was just a terrible place to get sober. I changed my mind about that. I think any place is a good place to get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I wasn't doing well in AA there. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip, and I'm certainly not proud of it as I stand here this morning. And thank God for the old-timers in AA, because somebody loved me enough to get my current sponsor. And I got to tell you that my life has been nothing but totally complete turnout as a result of that. And I absolutely adore the ground that man walks on. And I talked to him before I left LA yesterday, and I said, what do you want to talk about, you know, in St. Louis? And he said, oh, quit trying to be cute. Get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope, and tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They don't need your inspiration, my dear, and talk directly to those new people, the life and blood of AA. And I believe as I stand here this morning, and I welcome you, and I hope that you stay. And I think I did, without a doubt, the most important thing I can ever do, and that's to say, God, please help me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life here today, and it did not used to be that way for me, I can guarantee you. I come from an alcoholic hell. I cannot even describe it. It was so bad. And, you know, my life is real good today, and sometimes I forget how bad it was. And I can tell you the day I got sober, I weighed 95 pounds. I was the color of squash. I had an alcoholic hepatitis. I had a liver cirrhosis. I had ruptured esophageal varices. And if you don't know what that stuff is, you don't want to, because you die from that kind of stuff. And I was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, Nebraska, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. And if you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you it's not one of your finer wines, I can assure you. I'll guarantee you one thing, that crack has never seen a grape, make no mistake about that. And I literally could not believe what's going on in my life. I'd lost my children, lost my husband twice, although I don't really care about that, I want you to know. I lost my car, lost my house, I destroyed every relationship I'd ever had with anybody, and I was clearly dying from alcoholism. And then I lost the one thing that brought me my knees in this disease. I lost my nursing license. And you guys, I love my profession. It absolutely devastated me. It did not stop me from drinking. And there's a reason for that. And it's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I have an obsession that somehow, someday, I learn to control and enjoy my drinking. The persistent illusion is astonishing. Many of us pursue it in the gates of insanity and death. And I'll guarantee you one thing. I was in the gates of insanity day. I got sober and almost into my coffin. And like I said earlier, I am truly grateful to stand here 14 years sober because I really should be dead. And you know, like I said earlier, my sobriety date is May 30th, 1982. It was not always my sobriety date. I had to change that sobriety date, and there's a reason for that. I'm one of these people that had to go out and smoke dope when I got sober. And if you're smoking marijuana in this room today, you are not sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I will tell you right this minute. And I don't want to argue about it afterwards, but, you know, if you don't believe me, ask the old-timer room here this morning. You are not sober. And And I got my current sponsor, and I explained to him that where I come from in Lincoln, Nebraska, you can have two sobriety dates, one from alcohol and one from drugs. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, you're not in Lincoln, Nebraska, you're in Southern California, and we have one sobriety date, and change it, you know. And I said, where does the book mention pot? I was such a smartass when I got Clancy for a sponsor. And he said, well, the book does mention pot. And I said, Clancy, it does not. I had read the big book, and I knew it did not talk about marijuana in that book. And he said, if I find the word pot in that book, will you change your sobriety date? And I knew I was making a bad deal, but I agreed to do it anyway. And I'll be damned if he didn't flip open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And on the first page of Bill Wilson's story, it says, died by musket or by pot, you know. And I said, that is not what that means. And he said, I don't give a damn what it means. The book mentions pot, change your sobriety date. You know, and my life has flourished as a result of it, I got to tell you guys. But anyway, you know, like I said, I'm glad to be here. And, you know, I come from a wonderful home in Nebraska, and I want you to know that. And my mother wanted you to know it, too. I'll guarantee you that. You know, I forgot to mention something here today. My little boyfriend, Mike wants to marry me. I want you guys to know that. And if I was a little bit younger, he couldn't handle me now, trust me. But if I was a little bit younger, he told me he'd like to marry me. He gave me the most beautiful flowers in my room, and I want to thank you, Mike, for that. And the committee for the lovely presents in my room and the fruit and so on and so forth. And I have some lovely women in my life I want to introduce you guys to this morning. This is my beautiful baby, Tony, from Kansas City. Stand up, see it so they can see how pretty you are. Isn't she gorgeous? I have many grandchildren and great-grandchildren in this room here today. Girls, stand up so they can see who you are, you know. Aren't they pretty? Yeah. That's one thing about staying sober in AA for a number of years. You start sponsoring people, and you start gathering people in your life. You have a little AA family and stuff, and I'm so glad that I got to meet you girls here this weekend. But, you know, I one more time, I want to thank the committee. This is just a real treat in my life, I got to tell you. But anyway, you know, my mom and my mother is dead, you guys. My mom died 3 years ago, and I miss my mom so much I cannot begin to tell you. And my mother was always so proud her daughter was 10 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous when she died. Although she did not believe I was an alcoholic the day she died, if you want to know the truth. She thought I was having a few problems, and I sure as hell was, I can tell you that. But what I miss about my mom the most, and I love to talk about this because it's really kind of so, it's the stupidest reason to miss somebody, but this is what I miss about her the most. Whenever I go speak anywhere, I call her up. And she'd say, why do you have to get up there and tell those people all that stuff about you? They're not going to like you. And I'd always say, Mom, the rottener you are in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more people love you. And she'd say, well, I don't understand that. And I'd say, well, you don't have to understand it. And she'd say, and don't tell those people that you're afraid, because they don't like people that are afraid. And I'd always say, Mom, the more afraid you are in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more people love you. And one more time, she'd say, I don't get it. And why would she get it, you guys? She wasn't an alcoholic. And she always ended up by saying to me, and this is what I miss about her the most, I used to pry into it and give an opportunity. She'd say, I'm going to tell you something, young lady. You come from good stock, and we don't air our dirty laundry in public. And I'd always say, Mom, it's not dirty anymore, and she didn't understand that either. But she loved you guys, let me tell you. And I had come from an alcoholic home, and I don't think that's neither here nor there. I don't do well with people that send AA podiums and blame anybody for anything. And my father died from this disease on the streets of Chicago in 1979. And you tell me how a major in the Air Force dies on Skid Row. I don't know how that happened, other than the fact that he was an alcoholic. And whether or not he ever found A or not, I do not know. I just know that he certainly did not stay sober as a result of it. And, you know, one more time here today, this is a cunning, baffling, powerful disease that kills people. This is not a game I'm playing up here. This is serious business. And I would give anything in the world if my father were alive today, because we would have one hell of a lot to talk about, I can tell you. I have a sister who was Miss Rah-Rah in high school and homecoming queen and cheerleader and all that kind of crap and made straight A's and never cracked a book, and I made straight F's and never cracked a book, and that was the difference. My sister was a beautiful little girl. She's a gorgeous woman today. She looks nothing like I do, I got to tell you. And she was a model for many, many years for Neiman Marcus in Dallas, Texas, and retired here recently, and now she's teaching school in the West Indies. And I got to tell you guys, it's a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love my sister very, very much today, and I recently found out something about her. She's also very beautiful on the inside, too, and I never used to know that. I have a brother who's a pilot in the Navy in Spain who got home from Operation Desert Storm not too long ago, who was in that first attack over there. And I am so grateful that that war is over that you have no idea. Neither one of these people are alcoholic. I have another sister who's married the public defender in Lincoln, Nebraska, who got me out of one hell of a bunch of trouble when I got sober, and I'm welcome to their homes today, and I never used to be. I come from basically a very boring family, if you want to know the truth. They're highly successful people, and they bore me to tears, I got to tell you guys. I have a couple kids who are 36 and 37 years old, and I know I certainly don't look old enough to have kids that age, but by God, I sure am. And this is where it really starts getting interesting for me. These kids are anything but boring, I got to tell you guys. As a matter of fact, they're a couple of jerks if you want to know the truth. You know, I love my kids very, very much. Please don't get me wrong. But they are indeed a couple of jerks. And my oldest son's an alcoholic, and I know our book says that we don't call the people an alcoholic, but I'll call him one if I want to, because he is one. And got picked up for his number 9 drunk driving charge, and one more time he's gotten out of it. It never ceases to amaze me, the crap that we get away with. And I know I'm the last person in the world that can help that kid. I can just be an example to him and keep my mouth shut, and that's what I try and do. I have another son who I not believe was an alcoholic or had a problem with drugs or anything. And until I felt, let's see, it was 2 years ago last April, I went back to speak at a conference there in Nebraska that I started 10 years ago there. And I mean, 12 years ago there. And they asked me to come and be their Sunday morning speaker. And I thought, well, I'm not going to tell my kids I'm coming home. I'm just going to surprise them. Don't ever tell your kids you're not coming home. You're going to be surprised, let me tell you. And I walked with my oldest son's home at midnight on a Friday night. And my youngest son was there at midnight with sunglasses on. And he was a mess, let me tell you guys. His wife had kicked him out of the house, and this kid had been shooting crystal meth for about a year. I did not even recognize my own child. And I will tell you that drug will suck you dry in short order, let me tell you. And I found my son sobbing in my lap, and he said, Mom, I need some help. And I thought, well, you sure as hell do, you know. And I know I'm the last person that can help him. And I called my sponsor long distance, and Clancy said, get him a phone number and back out of it right this minute. And that's exactly what I did. But I really don't know anybody in NA there in Nebraska, because I'm not a member of Narcotics Anonymous. But I went back to this conference I was speaking at, and I found this kid that my son went to junior high with, and he was 9 years sober in AA, in addition to a member of Narcotics Anonymous there in Nebraska. And I'm happy to report here tonight that my son is 2 years sober in Narcotics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And his mother is very happy about that, I got to tell you. Hang on. I got to tell you something, to be perfectly honest about it, I don't like his program. I think it sucks, if you want to know the truth. I don't like his sponsor, and I don't like anything that he's doing. But I'll tell you one thing, I've kept my mouth shut about it. It is none of my business. It is God's business. One of the hardest things I've had to do in my sobriety and so forth. He's sober. That's all I need to know about it, I guess. But I wish his brother would pay attention, but I guess it's not time for that yet and stuff. But anyway, you know, this youngest son of mine surprised me in Los Angeles about 9 years ago, and he called me and he said, Mom, I'm getting married tomorrow. And I said, you know, getting married tomorrow, you know, it was a surprise to me that anybody would even have him, if you want to know the truth. And I said, Jeff, why do you call me the day before the wedding, expect me to be back in Lincoln? I said, the Pope's in L.A. I doubt if I can get a flight out of here. And he said, Mom, I don't expect you to come. It's just going to be a tiny little wedding. Don't worry about coming. Well, you know what? You don't tell people like me that stuff. I wanted to be there, and I was right about that. I couldn't get a flight out of L.A. The planes were just jammed and stuff, and I was just in a twit. You have no idea. And I talked to my sponsor about it, and this is the kind of loving direction I give my AA sponsor. He said, well, what the hell are you going to do? Walk? If you can't go, you can't go. Now shut up about it, you know. And that's what I did. And I talked to my mom the day after the wedding. And I said, Mom, how'd the wedding go? And she said, it was very lovely, but who was that little girl with them? And I said, what little girl? And she said, well, apparently Jeff's got a 4-year-old daughter that you don't know anything about. And I suggest you call your son and talk to him about it. And I need to tell you guys that I was more than happy to do that. Make no mistake about that. And I called Lincoln, and I said, Jeff, how'd the wedding go? And he said, it was very nice, Mom. And I said, who was that little girl with you guys? And he said, Mom, that's my daughter. And I said, why didn't you tell me that I had a grandbaby? I was so upset with him. Not because I had a grandbaby, because I didn't know about it. And he said, Mom, I was afraid you'd get drunk. And I thought, get drunk? I wouldn't have gotten drunk, at least I don't think I would have. And I was on the first thing smoking out of Los Angeles to get home and meet my little granddaughter. And I got to tell you guys that this child is the icing on the cake. She is the apple of my eye. Her name is Brandy. Now, doesn't that just figure? You know. And she walked up to me at the airport, and she said, are you my grandma? And I said, well, yes, I am. And she said, well, you're my favorite grandma. And see, that's what I want to hear. That's the stuff I strive for. And I said, Brandy, why do you say that? You don't even know me. And she said, because you wear ribbons in your hair, and grandmas don't wear ribbons in their hair. And I thought, well, that's about the stupidest thing I've ever heard, but I'll take whatever I can get here. And I flew her out to California several years ago to give me a cake at one of my AA birthdays, and she flew out from Nebraska by herself, and I thought she'd be terrified to be on that airplane by herself, but I was wrong about that. She got off that plane like she owned it after sitting in the cockpit with the pilot the whole trip, and I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble because this little girl never shuts her mouth for 2 minutes, you guys, and I'm not used to being little kids, and they drive me crazy real quick. And I said, Brandy, do you ever be quiet? You're giving me a headache. And she said, Grandma, I have a lot to say, and if you don't like it, take some aspirin, is what she said to me. I think that we have a prospective member of AA on our hands there. I hope I'm wrong about that. I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska 6 years ago in January and looked at my second grandchild, a beautiful baby boy that was born to my son and his wife. And I got to tell you guys that tears of gratitude rolled down my cheeks because I should not have been standing there. And I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska 5 years ago in January. I looked at grandbaby number three, another beautiful baby boy that was born to my son and his wife. And one more time, the tears were rolling. And I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska 4 years ago in January. Looked at grandbaby number four, another beautiful baby boy that was born to my son and his wife. And one more time, those tears were rolling. And 8 months ago tonight, I stood in Lincoln, Nebraska, and looked at grandbaby number five, a beautiful baby girl that was born to that alcoholic son of mine, his wife, and one more time, the tears were rolling. And you know what, you guys, I got the honor of naming that little girl. Her name is Hannah Rose. It's an old family name. And you know, and I'll guarantee you one thing, that was nobody was asking me to name grandbabies 14 years ago. There wasn't any grandbabies 14 years ago, but I wouldn't have been asked to name them, I can assure you. And things with my family are so good today, I cannot begin to tell you. It is only a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it took a long time for it to happen. In my case, that's a good thing, I got to tell you. You know, when I was growing up in Nebraska, I was a disruptive jerk is what I was. Always in trouble, always in kids out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I literally hated people telling me what to do. And I like it even less today, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere, and I hear that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that 125%, I got to tell you. You know, I really don't remember my first drink, you guys, but I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one, and I hope it was my last one. But I remember what alcohol did for me from the very beginning. It made me feel like I belonged, and I could be anything I wanted to be. I could do anything I wanted to do. I drank at any given opportunity after that, and I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous this morning, and I honor your podium by identifying myself as an alcoholic up here. I used a lot of drugs, too. I need to make that a small part of my story. My sponsor encourages me to do that. And you know, when I was growing up in Nebraska, there just wasn't a hell of a lot of drugs on the street. But I'll guarantee you, I found every single one of those drugs. And, you know, there's some marijuana and speed and stuff. And today, if you get caught for possession of marijuana, you get a ticket, big deal. When I was growing up, you went to prison is what happened to you. And that didn't scare me, nothing scared me. Everything I wasn't supposed to be doing. And I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here, that if you pat me on the head, my pants fall off is what happens to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You name it about, and I love it about them. They're the downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men. There's a room full of them here this morning. I can just feel it, you know. That's one thing I love about where I live in Southern California. We have so many sick men in Southern California, I'm just entertained around the clock 24 hours a day, girls, I gotta tell you. You know, I'm getting to the age now where silver-haired men are starting to become very attractive to me, which opens up a whole new ball game, I gotta tell you. Those young ones are nice girls, but sooner you get to talk to them, and they got nothing to say I want to hear, and I'm sure that I have nothing to say they want to hear either, but, you know, I had this funny thing happen to me, I want to tell you, this funny story. I was in Nashville, Tennessee about 3 years ago giving a talk, and one of the fine ladies of Nashville, Tennessee walked up to me afterwards, I want you to know, and this woman says to me, she says, "You're disgusting." And she wasn't kidding you guys, she meant every word of it. And I said, "Lady, from where I come from, being disgusting is a step up, I can assure you. And furthermore, if I wanted you to sponsor me, I phoned to Nashville and asked you." You know, I hear some women get this podium, you guys, and I wonder if they ever drank, I really do. I wonder if they do all their drinking. And one room and somebody shoot it to him through the keyhole with an eyedropper. You know, I was out there big time. I got myself into a lot of trouble. I've been taught to share that freely in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I offend anybody in this room here this morning, I would never offend anybody in the program that saved my life, I got to tell you. And besides that, my book tells me, and this is my favorite part of the big book, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, your dark past will be the greatest possession you have. And it goes on to say, excuse me, because you can literally divert death and misery for others. And I found that to be very, very true in my sobriety. So if I offend anybody here this morning, I don't want to hear about it afterwards either. But anyway, I got pregnant when I was 16 years old and I had to get married. And as it must be, I married an alcoholic, dumbest alcoholic woman. I go for colorful, exciting men that beat the hell of you and all kinds of stuff. And he wasn't even a man, you guys. He was only 17 years old and I was 16. I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. I couldn't take care of a baby, nor did I want to take care of a baby. And before we knew it, we had two babies to take care of. And I quickly found out what caused all that, and I put a halt to it, I'll guarantee you that. And that caused me a lot of trouble throughout the years. And as it must be, I married an individual that refused to work, that drank on a daily basis. He used to come home and beat me up on a daily basis. And I had never seen a man hit a woman before in my life, you guys. I'll guarantee you one thing. If my dad would lay one hand on my mom, she'd have knocked him from here to the moon, I got to tell you. And I grew to hate this guy very, very much. And I'm not blaming him for my disease, so please don't get me wrong. It's just part of my story, and I need to share it. And somebody in that family had to get a job, and I didn't finish junior high yet, for Christ's sakes. And I found a job as a nurse's aide at a hospital there in Lincoln, and the magic was put in Karen's life. I literally fell in love with nursing. And I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school, and I'd love to become a registered nurse. That's what I would love to do. You know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower. And I'm going to tell you from this podium here this morning that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. I don't have any willpower as far as my disease goes, but when I want to do it, I'm going to do it. And I went back. I finished junior high. I went to high school full-time. You know, I finished that. I went to college full-time. And at the age of 27 years old, I found myself a registered nurse. And I got to tell you guys, that is not easy stuff to do. You know, I worked 18 hours a day and went to college full-time, and that is hard stuff to do. And I rest my point with that. Alcoholics are some of the finest people in the world that can perform when they're not using alcohol, I got to tell you. But, you know, and I didn't do that for 3 years. But let me tell you what happened the minute I graduated from nurse's training. I started drinking again, I got to tell you. And I went to work at a hospital there in Lincoln that I had for 19 years. I worked in the operating room there, and I loved that job very, very much. And at the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you that a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged. I divorced this man at the age of 27 years old. You know, and I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. You know, I never did marry these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism, for Christ's sakes. I don't know anything about social drinking. I drank, ran with alcoholics, and we do indeed die from this. And so I worked at surgery there. I drank, ran with medical people for many, many years. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard and they played hard. And I need to tell you that the incidence of alcoholism amongst my profession is tremendously high. And that'll do a lot for your security levels. You're going to have surgery next week. That happens to be very, very true. And those people are so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly that we're to tell in the general way what our drinking was like. And you're going to get the general idea real quick about what my drinking was like. I can tell you guys about my drinking about 5 seconds flat if you want to know the truth. Many, many years ago, I was at a little concert in upstate New York called Woodstock. And that's exactly what my drinking was like. It was all about Woodstock. That Woodstock they had 2 summers ago was a piece of crap compared to the one I went to, I got to tell you. There will never be another Woodstock, trust me on that. I was up there with the medical team of people who were up there supposed to be working and stuff. And, you know, the state of New York, when they're going to have this big event, and they told these people, if you don't get medical coverage, you're not having this concert. So they started hiring people from the Midwest because they thought we'd be more responsible. And we were a seedy lot, I can assure you. And I was the first alcoholic to sign up for this nightmare. And found another nurses I ran around to join me. And we met about 80 residents on the East Coast, and there we were at Woodstock. And they paid us all a whole bunch of money up front. We spent our money by the time we got there. So we really were interested in doing too much work, I got to tell you. And I really don't remember much about the whole week, if you want to know the truth. And matter of fact, I don't remember anything about the whole week except the stuff I want to remember. And I didn't do 1 ounce of work the entire week, but they had a little hospital in that back lot of Woodstock, a semi-park back there, and that was our hospital. And I don't recall being in that semi the entire week, but I do recall what it was like to stand in front of the stage the night that Richie Havens sang Freedom, and Joe Cocker and Country Joe sang some of those groups that I love. I come from the roaring 60s, you guys, and I love rock and roll, let me tell you. And things have not changed in my life a little tiny bit. I loved Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin was my lady, let me tell you. Wouldn't Janis Joplin have been a fine member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys? I'd have hung out with Janis, let me tell you. I'd have traded Janis for Clancy any day of the week if you wanted to. Don't tell him that I said that. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't trade my sponsor for anybody in the whole world. But, you know, drinking for me at one time was a fun, fun thing. It'd be alive in the center this morning, same thing but that. But I cannot remember the fun, I can remember the pain that it caused me. It almost cost me my life. And I'm going to get into some quick drinking stories and get my recovery here. And, you know, I love the horse races, too. I love everything I'm supposed to be doing. And I've been to the horse races in Omaha, Nebraska with a couple of nurses that I worked with. And the girls told me, they said, Karen, the horse race has been over with for 3 hours. We're all drunk. Let's go back to Lincoln. And I said, well, run along. I've met 2 guys from Council Bluffs, Iowa, and these guys want to take me to a party, and by God, I was going. Like I said, you pat me on the head, and I'll follow you anywhere you want to go. And I really can't tell you much about this party, nor the guys that I was with. I just know that I woke up out of a blackout on Highway 2 by Palmyra, Nebraska, a little bit town of about 200 people, and I found out something very interesting about Palmyra, Nebraska, that they take a dim view of naked women walking on their highways. I found that out. And there I was at 2 o'clock in the morning, walking stark naked down the highway, in my high heels carrying my purse. And it was February in Nebraska, and it's a tad bit nippy out there in February in Nebraska to be doing that, I can tell you. And today I know why ducks' feathers freeze, I can assure you. And of all the luck, the first person I ran to was a highway patrolman. And, you know, in Nebraska, the cops travel by themselves. They don't have a partner. Out in California where I live, they're a little bit smarter than that. And this guy stops his squad car, and he rolls down his window, he turns on his siren, and he looked at me, and he said, what are you doing? And I thought, well, that's about the stupidest thing I've ever heard anybody say. It's quite obvious what I was doing. And he said, lady, you get in this squad car, and you sit down, and don't you touch me. Well, you know, one thing about a person like myself, every time I'm in trouble, I'll do one thing more to make it worse every single time. And I looked at this cop and I said, I'm not getting your squad car because you might try and rape me. He said, lady, I wouldn't bet any money on it. You are absolutely disgusting is what you are. And I'm here to tell you guys, if that made me mad at anything was going on, to show you how sick I was. And he had to get a matron out from the Palmyra, Nebraska City Jail to come out there and get me. And that woman was not pleased, I will guarantee you. They were very busy at that downtown jail, not have time for this foolishness. And I went downtown booked for indecent exposure, for assault and battery, for kicking in his windshield, for hitting her, for hitting him, all the delightful little antics that we pull as practicing alcoholics. And I would never forget how humiliating it was to be in that courtroom the very next morning, standing in my raincoat. I went downtown booked in that cop's raincoat. You know, cops keep raincoats in their trunks of their car for these occasions. And I was absolutely humiliated, let me tell you. And I'll be damned if my brother-in-law, the public defender in Lincoln, who was working down that day, and I did not know he was there, came walking up to me. And he said, Karen, have you lost your marbles or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I looked at my brother-in-law, and I was to say this to many, many people in my drinking career. You know, and you know, I said, oh, for Christ's sakes, Dennis, this could happen to anybody, you know. And, you know, and we all know better than that. And, you know, and that cost me about $3,000 to get out of that, and I just shirked it off like it was no big deal. You know, my track record with the Highway Patrol has not been real good in my life, I got to tell you, but it's getting better. I want to share with you what's happened to me recently with the Highway Patrol in Southern California. About 4 months ago, I was coming home from work on the Santa Monica Freeway in the morning, and I worked the night shift and stuff, and I was just exhausted. I was in no mood for anybody's shenanigans. I just wanted to get home and go to bed and stuff, and the traffic was just miserable out there that morning. And this CHP, California Highway Patrol, a motorcycle cop, pulled up alongside of me, and he was waving at me. And, you know, he was acting like he knew me or something. I thought, you are weird. Get away from me. I don't even know you. We got some weird cops in L.A., I don't mind telling you guys. And some of them are really nice, but some of them are very strange, too. And I thought, what does he want? And so I jumped my car ahead, and he was alongside of me again, waving at me. And I thought, what is the matter with this guy? I'm getting away from him. So I got off on my Cloverfield off-ramp, and he was right behind me with his siren going, and he pulled me over, and I thought, well, what was I doing? I wasn't speeding or anything, and he came up alongside of my car, and I got my driver's license out, my registration, and so forth, and you guys, I about died laughing. Nobody but AA members has this happened to. This guy takes off his helmet, and he says to me, Karen, don't you remember me? I'm secretary of the meeting out in the valley. You come be one of my speakers one night? And I thought, why don't you call people on the telephone? That's what most people do. He said, because this is more fun, that's why. And he told me, this is fairly new territory for me over here in Santa Monica. He said, you know, does Clancy take this freeway to work in the morning? And there's a devil that makes me do stuff, you guys, I cannot believe. And I said, well, you know what, as a matter of fact, he doesn't. And he said, what time do you suppose he goes to work? I said, I know exactly what time he goes to work. Probably about 9:30, quarter to 10 and stuff. And I said, don't you tell him that I told you. He said, I won't say a word. He said, what on-ramp does he take? I said, I think Cloverfield. And so anyway, I stayed up real late to talk to my sponsor that morning, and I called him about 11 o'clock, and I said, good morning, Clancy. He said, let me tell you what happened to me this morning. I said, well, let me tell you what happened to me first, and I told him. He said, did you give that guy my name? And I said, no, and that's true. I gave him his on-ramp, right? The things have changed with the Highway Patrol in my life, I got to tell you. But anyway, you know, that cost me a lot of money to get out of that, and that's the story of my life. I just shirked life like it was no big deal. You know, I will never forget what it felt like to wake up in the very hospital I worked at in surgery. And one more time, I've been the horse races. You know, for a number of years, I thought the horse races were my problem. It certainly was not my drinking. And I'm one of these alcoholic females with a big mouth when I drink. And, you know, and I've been the horses in Lincoln, smarted out this guy at the horse race track, and he belted me right in the teeth, is what he did. And a plastic surgeon was putting 18 stitches in my mouth. And I'll never forget what this doctor said to me. As long as I live, I'll never forget this. He said, Karen, we love you so much. What is wrong with you? You were such a good nurse and stuff. You know, we think you're an alcoholic. Let's send you to a treatment center and get this drinking problem taken care of so you can get on with your life here. And you guys, I could not believe the audacity this man had. He would say that to me. And I said, just fix my lip and get out of my face. I'll drink if I want to drink. And that's exactly what I did. And the drunk driving charges and the bad checks, all the stuff that we eventually do. My kids were in trouble. I never could marry these guys I was engaged to. They kept dying from alcoholism. And I thought, you know what? I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. The kids need their father. Besides, I need to get even with him for all the things that he's done to me. And those are not very good reasons to get married again, I got to tell you. And I'm certainly not proud as I stand here this morning. You know, if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is like taking a bite out of the same turd twice, if you will. I danced that man through three of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth. And I love to tell you guys this story I'm about ready to tell you. And my sponsor always tells me that is not funny, and you should not be telling that from AA podiums. And I always say, okay, I won't tell it anymore. And he said, no, go ahead and tell it, and let those people see how sick you really were, and apparently how sick you really still are. And I'm still sick, and I still think it's funny, and I'm telling the story. When I married him again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I'm going to kill you the next time you hit me. And he said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied is what he did. And he came home drunk one night. And I happened to be sober this night for some reason, and I'll never know why. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk. They want to take you to bed and stuff. And I was not buying it. If there's anything I can't stand, it's some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. And I will say that when the shoe's on the other foot, though, it's fine with me. That guy came home and indicated that to me, and I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed. Make no mistake about that. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, if you want to know the truth. And I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch, and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. And he sat up for hours, you guys, with his eyes pried open. And as it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis. And this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I can assure you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you the story unless I tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. And I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse, you know. But anyway, I thought to myself, what can I do to get even with this guy for all the things that he's done to me? And I came up with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. You know, that's one thing that we should never do is drink and think at the same time, I can assure you. And this was many, many years ago, you guys, when super glue first came out. And super glue was powerful stuff. You'd not want to screw around with super glue. And I knew that stuff worked very, very well because my kids were plastering in the house that wasn't moving. And I got that super glue out, and I read the directions on that super glue. And like I said, I was drunk, and I wasn't seeing very clearly. And what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you better get off within 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said was, in fact, if this hits human skin, you get off within 5 minutes is what it said. And I went over to this man, and I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not one place... There was not... For some reason, this morning, I'm bright-eyed, and I think that's funny, you know. I get so excited when I tell this story, I could just do it all over again, I can assure you. Yeah, there wasn't one place that's meant not to have super glue, and I laughed about it, and I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning to screams of horror like you cannot even believe. And you know, I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true. But I'll tell you what happened to my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can assure you. And we had a telephone by our bedroom there in Lincoln, and he called the police, and the cops were in front of our home with their sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And you know, one thing you guys got to keep in mind here, they do not see things, these things happen in Lincoln, Nebraska. In California, it wouldn't surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops were laughing, which led me to believe the whole thing was funny. And they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I looked at those cops and I said, what makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing there with glue on my hands, for Christ's sake. And they said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you cannot arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against her husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital that I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the host staff saw what Karen did. And they took me to jail, I might add. It turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they had to get two surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off. And, you know, there's a paper written about that at Creighton. Anybody in this room thinking about going to medical school there, you can read about it if you want to. I'd always wanted a paper written about me, but not like this, I got to tell you. And I was sitting in that jail thinking to myself, I am getting the hell out of this marriage. Because when this guy comes home from the hospital, he's going to glue something to mine shut. He would have, too, I got to tell you. And God only knows I couldn't have that happen. And I divorced that man one more time. And I will tell you guys on the brighter side of things here this morning that Alcoholics Anonymous really does work. Because we have an amends step in this program. And my sponsor made me get on an airplane and fly to Sacramento, California and make amends to my ex-husband, where he currently lives with his new wife and stuff. And I tried to tell my sponsor, I'm not sorry that I did that. Therefore, I don't have to make the amends. He said, I don't give a damn whether you're sorry or not. Get on the airplane and get there and do what I'm asking you to do, and maybe one of these days you will be sorry. And I don't need to tell anybody in this room here this morning that when that guy sees me, he kind of backs up, I got to tell you. But we were able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends to that man. And I will tell you guys that I walked away from him. I was free what I had done to him. I was free of being married to him twice. And I will tell you that the promises in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous started coming through my life when I made those amends. So I know this thing works, you just got to do it for it to work. You know, I also want to tell you what's happened is a direct result of me making amends to that man. You know, my ex-husband and I are still very much in love with each other, if you guys want to know the truth, but there will not be a third time in my lifespan, I got to tell you. We are totally incompatible, and we both know that. But anyway, you know, my kids have made it a lifelong battle to try and get their dad and I back together, and I had to tell my kids many, many years ago, do not discuss your father with me. You know, I'm glad your dad's in your life. I'm glad that your dad loves you. You know, he should love you. You should love him. That's the way it should be. But I don't want to talk about your dad with you anymore. So they just don't discuss their father with me anymore, and that's just fine with me and stuff. But anyway, I made my amends to him, and about 3 years ago, I got a phone call from him, and I made amends about 5 years ago. And he said, Karen, I can't quit drinking. What do I do? You know, there is no greater example, in my opinion, than an example of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to tell you. I'd be the last person in the world that guy would ever call and ask for any advice, I got to tell you. And I about fell off my chair in Venice, California. He said, I don't know what to do. And I quickly wanted to get an airplane and get there and manage the whole thing. But AA kicked in for me big time, and I found myself saying exactly what I should have told him. I said, why don't you call Sacramento AA? That's what you need to do. And I gave him two phone numbers and some of the finest people I know in Alcoholics Anonymous up there. And I didn't hear much more about it and stuff. And anyway, on my AA birthday, 2 years ago in May, I got some roses from him, and I, you know, I was just flabbergasted. How do you know it was my AA birthday? And I told Clancy, and I said, I need to send a thank you or something. He said, you stay away from him. He's probably a newcomer in AA. He said, you know, he probably found out your sobriety date. You stay away from him. The last person really he needs is you back in his life, I got to tell you. And so I didn't do anything about it. I didn't even say a thank you or anything. And I got a phone call from him last October. And he said, you're going to be in Sacramento speaking next month, aren't you? And I said, well, how do you know that? He said, because it's on an AA flyer up here. And I said, well, how did you get a hold of an AA flyer? He said, Karen, I've been sober and, you know, in Sacramento for almost 3 years, and I have a sponsor and everything. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, you guys, I was in awe of Alcoholics Anonymous one more time. And he said, do you mind if I come to your talk? And I thought, well, you know, I can't keep anybody up an AA meeting. Of course I don't mind. And he said, okay. And he came over that night. He had his sponsor with him, and he sponsors three guys in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, please don't tell that glue story tonight. Please don't tell that. I said, Denny, I wouldn't do that to you. You know, it came time for me to tell my glue story, and there's a devil that makes me do things. I have no control over this devil inside of me. And I told my glue story, and I said, and there he is, third row over, second seat to the right. And I loved it. But he loved it too. Alcoholics love attention, you guys, let me tell you. And he got a tremendous amount that night, I got to tell you. People were really looking at him funny. They said, do you walk funny? And, you know, can you still have sex? They were asking him all kinds of questions about that glue incident. I'm sure he could hardly wait to get the hell out of that night. But anyway, don't ask me to do something. I'm going to do it every single time, I guess, unless my sponsor asks me. But I divorced that man one more time. And I will tell you guys that I got involved with the most bizarre man I've ever met before in my life. This guy told me he was in the mafia. Now, I don't think anybody in Lincoln, Nebraska is in the mafia, for Christ's sakes. And I was lying to him, and he was lying to me. It was your typical alcoholic nightmare is what it was. I was drinking on a daily basis. I was taking Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. It was beginning to be no more fun. Tunis, I got to tell you. You know, I'm a nurse, and I've studied alcoholism, and I knew all about it before I became one. And it shows me one more time here this morning that self-knowledge does not mean a damn thing with this disease. It's action that counts. Nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous do we have a chapter called Into Thinking, but we do have one that's called Into Action. And that is the only reason I'm standing here 14 years sober, I got to tell you. And the day came for me, the hospital told me, we have had all the crap we're going to take off of you. We cannot read about our nursing staff in the paper anymore. Glue and husbands, drunk driving charges, bad checks, all the stuff that you're doing. Everything that you do in Lincoln's in the paper, I'm sorry to say. And they knew my game, let me tell you. And they said, excuse me, you either go into a treatment center, you no longer had this job. Well, you guys, you know what? You don't tell people like me that stuff. And I said, you and what army's going to make me go to a treatment center? And I walked out of a job that I loved, wanting in the whole world, and I cannot say that enough this morning. And I drank, and I drank, and I died 1,000 times over. I went to work at a nursing home there in Lincoln. And I'm about ready to tell you guys something I'm not proud to discuss, from any AA podium. It took me years in my sobriety before I would ever mention this. I found myself still in drugs in that nursing home. I was still in morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium, and I get my damn hands on. If you think I'm proud of that, you were sadly mistaken. And the day came for me, the hospital told me, we have held the crap we're going to take off of you. We cannot read about our nursing staff in the paper anymore. You know, all this kind of stuff. And these people walked up to me and they said, you know what, Karen? You are just weird is what you are. You know, you take good care of the patients. You're a good nurse and stuff, but you're just weird. And I, you know, I looked at them and I said, you know what? You know, and my head was telling me, if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board, you'd be weird too. But I didn't say that. And I just threw my narcotic keys at them and I walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that interview and I got that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining a certain level of alcohol in my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly. And I was in hot water up to my yin-yang, let me tell you. I had to drink and I had to take drugs and I had no more choice than any of it. And I will tell you guys right up front here this morning, it was anything but funny. The very idea that I have to, that I might drink again makes the hair on my neck stand straight up, I gotta tell you. And that is why I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't want to have that stuff happen to me again. And, you know, I could not go 3 hours without drinking or using drugs. And, you know, without going into tremendous withdrawal. And it was a horrible way to live, let me tell you. And I kept that job for about 2 or 3 weeks doing the same things I was doing at that nursing home. Stealing drugs, justifying in my head. I don't mean to do this. I'm not a bad person. This is a temporary thing. I'm never going to do it again. We all know that never happens for us. We just jump from the fat to the fire here. And the day came to me when I got caught red-handed and stole some morphine from that hospital. And this has got to be, without a doubt, the most humiliating day of my entire life. When they say, you give us your narcotic keys and you get out of this hospital, don't you ever walk back in here again. We're reporting this to the State Board of Nursing Nebraska. That's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they should have done. My other two jobs should have done it too, as a matter of fact. And to make a long story short here this morning, I lost my nursing license. I threw the one thing, you guys, that I love running in the whole world right down the toilet so I could drink. And like I said earlier, that is total insanity is what it is. It's also called alcoholism. And anyway, to make a long story short this morning, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the streets. And I have traveled the Midwest. I prostituted myself. And I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or do. And I'm still so sick in the head sometimes. You know, I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again, you know. And my sponsor assures me I'm still a very ill person thinking that kind of crap, you know. And I've been in nut houses. I've been in detoxes. I've been in jails. I've been in institutions. I cannot think of a thing that I had me out on the streets as a practicing female alcoholic. So, you know, it's very much a surprise to me that I woke up this morning and I looked at my hands and they were not shaken, but with violent tremors, I got to tell you. It shouldn't be the way it was this morning, you guys. I should be dead from this, I got to tell you. And but for Alcoholics Anonymous, I would be dead, I can assure you of that. But anyway, like I said, I spent 2 years on the streets and stuff. And the day came to me when I was back there in Lincoln. I wound up on Skid Row back there in Nebraska. Standing on that corner of 9th and O Street, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog is what I was doing. And I certainly had better things intended for myself than to be doing that, I got to tell you. I will never forget that last day of my drinking as long as I live. And I hope to God it was that last day of my drinking. I was so physically sick. Apparently, I passed out on the streets of what happened to me. And I really can't tell you much about it at all. But I do remember thinking to myself, there was a Hilton Hotel adjacent to that Skid Row area. And I remember thinking 2 years ago, I used to stand on top of the Hilton Hotel and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I rather imagine those people felt the same way when they arrived there. And like I said, I can't tell you much about it at all. I woke up in an intensive care ward at the very hospital I was born at, the very hospital I worked at for 19 years. And I will tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. You know, I'm not a very big person. I only weighed 95 pounds the day I got sober. And I was coming off a quart or whatever a day and 200 milligrams of Valium a day. That's a lot of booze, that's a lot of pills, and I had a lot of dying to do. You know, they say that most alcohol withdrawal is over with in 3 days, and perhaps it is for some people. It certainly was not for me. It was going to be a long, long time before I was going to start feeling better. And I laid in that intensive care ward for 30 solid days, and I shook and I shook and I died and I died. I had tubes coming out of my belly. They were draining fluid off my liver. I had IVs going, and I just wanted to die is what I wanted to do. You know, somebody would have given me a pint of vodka. I'd have shot somebody for a pint of vodka, and I mean that sincerely as I stand here today. I don't know how many people in this room here this morning can identify with that kind of drinking, but I will tell you there is nothing I wouldn't have done to get alcohol in my blood system at that point. And obviously I didn't get any and stuff. And I would scream at those nurses and say, you get me some Librium, you get me some Valium, you get me something. This is absolutely inhumane. Anybody should have to go this kind of withdrawal. And they said, Karen, listen to us. You need to fill every one of those tremors and maybe you'll never do it again. I went to a fine, fine facility, you guys. They knew exactly what they were doing with alcoholics. They went on to tell me, there's nothing wrong with your heart. It's not throwing any irregularities. You need to fill every one of those tremors and maybe you'll never do it again. And I did not want to hear that, let me tell you. But let me tell you what these people did for me. And I will be forever grateful as long as I'm sober in this program. They got about 10 members of Alcoholics Anonymous to come and sit with me. And these people never left me day or night for 30 solid days. It was your original 12-step call, let me tell you. And I really fell in love with these people, and I'll tell you why. There was nobody in my life the day I got sober. My family wanted nothing to do with me. They've been through it too many times. They're going to go through it one more time. My mom, who I loved very, very much, you guys, came to my hospital bed in that hospital. And she told me, she said, how could you do this to us one more time? And you and I said to my mother, have you guys ever had 5 seconds of your life that you'd like to take back? I would give anything in the world if I could take those 5 seconds back. And I told my mother to get the hell out of my room is what I did. A woman who I respected and admired at one time told her to get the hell out of my room. And I made amends for that. But I'm going to tell you something. I have to live with that. And all I can do is be a good example of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've made my amends. My mother's dead. And get on with my life. But I still feel bad about that. I got to tell you. And my mother left my room crying. And my mom had to be hospitalized because of me and put on tranquilizers. And my mom did not deserve that by a long shot, I got to tell you. And like I said, I've not forgotten it as I stand here this morning. But anyway, I fell in love with these people, and I'll tell you why. Because, you know, there was absolutely nobody wanted nothing to do with me. And they'd see me by the hour, and they'd say things like, Karen, just keep breathing. That's all I got to do is breathe. And I'd say, when is this withdrawal going to stop? And they said, when it's time, that's when it's going to stop. And that wasn't good enough for me. I wanted a date is what I wanted. And they couldn't give me a date, and they were absolutely accurate about that. When it's time, it's time. And at 30 days of sobriety, I walked into the official treatment program at that hospital. I'm apprised of a treatment center. I have no opinion on one way or the other, but apparently I went to a fine one because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, there's a lot of bad ones out there, you guys, let me tell you. And thank God I went to a good one. And let me tell you what I was like when I was 30 days sober. I needed you so desperately on day one, but 30 days later was a whole different ballgame when you started telling me what to do. And I walked in the group therapy the first time. There was 14 men in that group. They were all younger than I was, and they're for drunk driving charges and stuff like that. I couldn't identify with these people. I'd done those things years prior to my alcoholism. And this one guy looked at me and said, you think you're better than us here, don't you? And I made a comment to this man that I was to pay for a long, long time in that treatment center, one I would not repeat from your podium here this morning, I can assure you. And as a direct result of that comment, I found myself an inpatient program for 7 months, you guys, in a 30-day inpatient program. And that is a long time to be in an inpatient 30-day program, I can assure you. And I completed that, and I went to an outpatient program, and I went to an evening care program, and I went to an aftercare program. And I found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. You know, where I went through treatment in Lincoln, a lot of people are getting kicked out of treatment for fraternizing. I'll guarantee you one thing, I didn't. Nobody wants to fraternize with an orange person, I can assure you. And, you know, they used to bring people to the hospital, and they'd say, see what's going to happen to you if you keep on drinking? I thought, get the hell out of my room. How dare you come to my room and say that? But, you know, in retrospect, you guys, I'm glad they did that. It's just one more thing that keeps me away from that alcohol, I got to tell you. But anyway, I found myself very, very active in AA in Nebraska, and I wasn't doing one thing the way you teach people in AA to do it. And I rapidly went through 19 sponsors in that town. I would tell the new people, you don't need to read the book, and you don't need a sponsor. We can do the hell we want to do right here. This is an individual program. And needless to say, I was not real popular with the old-timers in Lincoln, Nebraska. And you know, you guys, the old-timers in AA are so precious to me as I stand here this morning. But not in 1982. I could have cared less what these people thought. And you can pull your crap in it just for so long, and these old-timers are going to start nailing you one right after the other. God love the mean old-timers in AA. They literally saved my life, I got to tell you. And they are dying off right and left, I got to tell you guys. And they have taught me well, and I'll be internally grateful for that, I got to tell you. But the day came in, this old guy with 29 years of sobriety grabbed me out of an AA meeting. He said, come outside and talk to me. He said, we have had all the crap we're going to take off of you. How dare you tell the new people in AA they don't need the book and they don't need a sponsor? He said, you're like a typhoid Mary. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. He said, you stay away from the new people. And he went on to tell me, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska this weekend. His name is Clancy. Go to this man's speaker and ask this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I heard all about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. And I told this old charmer, I said, who the hell do you think you are that you're going to tell me he's going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go with us Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee you I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. And I paid that money back to you, by the way. And I will tell you guys that from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that Clancy literally, and I mean literally, put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous into my life. And my life's never been the same since that talk. And there's a reason for that. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying with another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in Karen's life. I never would have asked that man to sponsor me in a million years. Trust me, I would not have asked him. And I found myself walking across that convention floor and asking that man to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazier than I ever thought of being, you know. Yeah. He sponsors Dick and Nancy, right? Just kidding. And I asked him to be my sponsor, and he said that to me, and I thought, why did he say that to me? He doesn't even know me. And I wasn't aware of the fact that this old-timer called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked him if they brought me, if he would talk to me. And he said, you know, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. And I was standing in my little white dress on, my little white gloves on, acting like an angel, and he saw right through my crap, I got to tell you, and thank God he saw through my crap. And he said, Karen, I don't like to sponsor people on long-distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you, because if I don't do it for you, you're probably going to go die somewhere. He said, I'm going to tell you something, young lady. You better listen to me real good, because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me today. I tell you not to call me every day. You think it costs too much money to call from Lincoln to L.A.? You better get 2 jobs, because that's what you're going to be doing. You're going to sponsor people. You become an active bottom member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not going to argue with me. You're not going to defend your actions to me. You're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about we stood at the turning point. This is the day when my recovery really did begin in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said 2 words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. One more time, God working in Karen's life. I never would have told that man, yes, sir, in a million years. Trust me, I would not have said it. And you know, I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in AA in the right way. And one of the first directions my sponsor gave me, I want you to call Dick Martin in Bellevue, Nebraska. I want you to get there and get involved with those people. You know, I sponsored Dick, and I want you to get there and meet those people. And you know, I'd seen Peggy and Dick at conferences before, and you know, of course, Dick has a tape company and stuff, and these people always scared me because they were doing things that I was not doing, let me tell you. And they were very active in AA, and they were very enthusiastic in Alcoholics Anonymous. And quite frankly, today as I stand here, I know what that was all about. I was terrified of what they were doing, if you want to know the truth. And I thought, and I told Clancy, he said, I don't even like those people. And he said, I didn't ask you if you liked them. I told you to call them is what I told you to do. And so I picked up the phone and I called Dick, and Dick answered the phone, and I told him who I was and that Clancy was my sponsor. And I said, you know, I don't even like you guys, but I'm doing what I was asked to do. And you know what he said to me, you guys, I about started bawling. He said, why don't you get in your car and drive up tonight and have dinner with us and go to the meeting? And I thought, oh, you know, what did I act like that for? Why do I act like that to people that were trying to help me? And Dick is a dear, dear friend of mine. I absolutely adore him and stuff, him and his wife. And they have a fabulous group up there in Bellevue, Nebraska. It's called the Foxhall Group. And if you ever had a chance to attend it up there, I urge you to get up there and see it. And probably the most enthusiastic AA group in the world, if you want to know the truth. But anyway, I went up there and joined what they were doing. I tried to get up there at least once every 2 weeks. I worked a 3-11 shift, and I couldn't get up there every night. But yeah, it was like a shot in the arm to me. And I got to meet the old-timers up there, and they helped me so very, very much and stuff. But you know, one of the first directions my sponsor gave me, I want you to get that nursing license back. And I tried to tell Clancy, I cannot get that kind of humiliation. And he said, are you arguing with me? And I said, no. He said, get up to the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska and tell those people that you have been sober in a year and a half, you'd like the opportunity to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that is, without a doubt, the most important thing I can say in this room this morning. I did what my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought it would work or not. And I went there and asked them for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I can assure you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, if you want to know the truth, and keep my mouth shut in the process. And one of the happiest days of my life occurred 10 years ago this April, when one more time I was searching in front of the State Board of Nursing Nebraska, and what they told me brought in my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, welcome home, you're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And that is a gift from AA. I do not deserve that, but I intend to take it, I can tell you that. I went to California to visit a couple of times. I fell in love with Southern California AA. I truly believe, and I know that everybody believes it where they're from, that I am in the mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous in the whole world. And I told my sponsor on the phone one day, I want to move to Southern California. I want to live on that crazy Venice Beach with all those crazy people. I knew I'd feel like a glove, not been wrong about that either. I want to go to the Pacific Group. I want to work at UCLA in the operating room. I want to be on 2 of their transplant teams, their heart and liver transplant team. I want this, I want that. And every single one of those things have come true for me. And those are all gifts from AA. I do not deserve any of it, but I intend to take it. I can tell you that. And you know, before I sit down here this morning, I want to tell you guys these 2 stories that I love to tell members of Alcoholics Anonymous because I get to relive them all over again. And Sean loves my little bear story. He loves to hear it anyway. But I love to tell these stories, and they're so very, very precious to me. And they mean so much to me because Clancy's taught me some things here that would not have happened. I never could have shared these stories with you if it wasn't for my sponsor. You know, my sponsor taught me early on that I need a spiritual program in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said, you know, Karen, I'm not a real spiritual person, but he said, I believe in God, and you have got to start doing something in that area. And I said, Clancy, I do not believe in God. I cannot do that kind of stuff. He said, you don't have to believe in God. You don't even have to want to do it, but you've got to do it anyway. And he flipped open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he pointed out where it says to me, where he showed me where it says, that I get a daily reprieve from this disease, contingent on a spiritual maintenance of power greater than myself. He went on to tell me there's going to come a day in your life when I can't help you, AA can't help you, and you had better well have a God in your life, or you're going to be dead from the disease of alcoholism. He said, you can make that God anything you want to make it, but just start doing something in that area. And I said, well, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to get on your knees in the morning, I want you to get on your knees at night, and I want you to pray for God's will. Do not pray for things, pray for God's will and the power to carry that out. And I started doing that, you guys, and I didn't feel any connection with God. I felt like a fool doing it, if you want to know the truth. And anyway, the 1985 World Conference in Montreal was coming up, and every day I would talk to my sponsor on the phone. I still lived in Nebraska at that time, and I'd call him in L.A., and I'd say, Clancy, this is not working for me. I don't feel any connection with God. And what I wanted from my sponsor was him to say to me, then don't do it anymore. That is not what he said. What he said to me was, are you staying sober one day at time in Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, well, you know that I am. He said, that's the point of the whole thing. Are you stupid or what? You know, I wasn't playing with a full deck when I arrived here. It took me a long, long time to get these little simple things. And in 1985, I found myself in Montreal, Canada, at the World Conference of AA. And if you guys haven't experienced a World Conference, you're going to see this all over again in Minneapolis, Minnesota in the year 2000. It's something that none of us should ever miss. It's a fabulous, fabulous thing. And you know, I really couldn't afford to go to this thing. And I've made two people that I sponsored join me, and two other more people besides that join us, and then a sixth person. And six people drove to Montreal straight through from Lincoln, Nebraska. And we only had $200 apiece. We had no place to stay. And I thought, I don't care if I have to sleep outside. I'm going to that World Conference. And we got the convention center. We found an apartment to rent for the whole week for $100. I could not believe our good luck. And I found myself in a great big football stadium at that Friday night meeting. And there was 56,000 sober alcoholics in that football stadium. And I need to tell you guys that I was in awe of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me tell you, I was in awe. And they were down in that football field, and they were practicing for a flag ceremony. And alcoholics from all over the world carrying their national flags. And my sponsor was down there helping them practice for that flag ceremony. And I ran down to tell him hi. And he introduced me to people from all over the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you guys, I'm from Lincoln, and I was impressed, let me tell you. And I'm impressed today by people from all over the world in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I ran back up and joined my friends, and that flag ceremony started. And I will never forget this as long as I live. I'll never forget this. When the United States of America's flag touched the turf of that stadium, I saw 56,000 sober people go absolutely crazy. And I looked around myself, and I did not see one dry eye in that football stadium. I saw those old-timers sitting around, all the new people and all the people in between. And they all seemed to be loving Alcoholics Anonymous so very, very much. And they were literally sobbing openly, you guys, let me tell you. And, you know, I thought to myself, why can't I feel what these people are feeling? I, too, wanted to love AA, and I could not seem to achieve it somehow. And for the first time in my life, I got tears in my eyes. I did not try and stop. And for the first time, with any amount of sincerity whatsoever, I said, God, thank you for getting me here. Please help me to stay here. Please help me love this program as much as these people do. And there it was, you guys. There it was, the first sincere attempt I ever made to pray. But I'll tell you one thing, the attempts I made before were all solid ones, let me tell you, because it got me to that point, you know. So just keep doing it until you believe it. Keep doing it until you believe it. And you know, and I will tell you that for one solid second, my world stopped. And I will tell you that I had chills run up and down my spine. And I remember that woman who was standing on Skid Row in Lincoln, who literally could not get sober, you guys, who literally could not quit drinking. And there she was, 3.5 years sober. I personally believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is divinely inspired. How could it not be, you guys? How could it not be? And stuff. Look around you. These people should be dead, everybody in this room here today. But you know, I will tell you that in a foreign country, in a foreign land, I came to believe in a power greater than myself by watching and being with the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have taught that God every day sincerely since, because I believe what my sponsor has taught me. I get a daily reprieve, and that's all that I get. You guys, I have a fabulous job. I work in surgery at UCLA, but it's just a damn job is what it is. My sponsor has taught me that God and AA have got to be center core of my life. That's to be the focus of my life. Everything else revolves around that. You know, the men, the money, whatever, cars, whatever the deal is, God and AA are centerfold there. Anytime I get out of that centerfold, I'm in big trouble, let me tell you. And I've done that many, many times in my sobriety, but thank God I've always got back in the center of it again and stuff. But, you know, I'm a human being. I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I make a lot of mistakes in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'll tell you one thing. The one thing that I have never done, I have not drank for 14 years. I've done everything else wrong, I can tell you, but But anyway, you know, my sponsors taught me. He said, you know, Karen, just do what God gives you to do and quit debating and stuff. And I said, well, what the hell does that mean? And I said, you know, what is God's will? He said, how the hell am I supposed to know? I'm not God, you know. He said, but I have to believe that when I'm not lying or cheating or stealing and I'm trying to be of service to you and the people that I sponsor and on and on and on, that I am doing God's will because I feel good about that kind of stuff. And so I got, you know, kind of thinking that way a little bit and stuff. And so I quit trying to lie so much, and I absolutely quit stealing, and I started feeling better. And I said, well, you mean like pick up the phone when it rings? That's God's will? He said, I don't know whether it's God's will or not, but just pick up the phone. Maybe it might be one of your babies in trouble, you know. Well, I don't want to pick up telephones. It might be bill collectors on the other end. It's not anymore, but it used to be for me. He said, do it anyway. Now, just do what I ask you to do. So I started doing those things. And about 7 years ago in Los Angeles, we had a tremendous nursing crisis there. And I will tell you that we were working our butts off, let me tell you. And I was always the first one to complain about it, I'm sorry to say. And this one particular night, you know, I'd worked 72 hours this week. I had the night off. I went to home. I went to a meeting early in the evening. I went home and I went to bed early. I was just whipped, let me tell you. And the phone rang about 2 o'clock in the morning. And it was my boss. And my boss makes Clancy look like a pussycat, I can assure you. She's probably one of the finest nurses I've ever before in my life. And one of these days, I want to be just like her. And, you know, and I didn't want to answer that phone, you guys. I knew it was UCLA. And I didn't want to go to work, but I answered anyway. And she said, I got 18 people sick over here tonight. I need your help. And I thought, oh, leave me alone. I said, you know, I have worked 72 hours. She said, Karen, I need you to come to work. We're going to do a transplant little girl that's about 3 years old. I've got nobody to do it. And she hung up on me is what she did. Well, my sponsors taught me to do what's in front of me and not debate it. And that was clearly in front of me. And I was going to call him, but I don't want to talk to Clancy about nothing at 2 o'clock in the morning, I can assure you. I know what he'd have told me. Why don't you just go to work and do what they ask you to do? Nobody ever died from lack of sleep, Karen. Then I'd have to say, well, there's a first time for everything, Clancy. You know, I just didn't want to get into it. I just went to work. I knew what he'd told me to do. And I'm so glad that I did and stuff. And I got over there. You know, I'm a selfish person, I'm sorry to say. And I got over there, and I sent my orderly upstairs to get a little girl and bring her down to surgery. And we had a jet coming from the East Coast to deliver for this child. We had some time to kill and stuff. And he called me in the back. He said, come out front and get your patient. You're not going to believe all the people that are with this family. And I thought, well, that's nice that they have the support and stuff. And I went out front to get my little patient. And the first thing I noticed was the mother. She had the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life. And the dad was good looking and stuff. And you guys, there was about 75 people with this family. And I thought, how highly unusual at 4 o'clock in the morning. How highly unusual any time, day or night, if you want to know the truth. And I looked down at my little patient. And I will tell you guys that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to love at a level I never, ever, ever dreamt possible myself. And I literally fell in love with this little baby girl. And she was so sick, she couldn't lift her head off the pillow. She was so sick and dying from some strange liver thing. And I thought to myself, you didn't want to be here, Karen. You didn't want to be here. And I thought, I'm going to be the best nurse I've ever been before in my life. And that's exactly what I was, let me tell you. And you know, I bent down and taught this little girl, and she had a bear in her arms. And she was hanging on that little bear for dear life, I got to tell you. And I said, oh, you brought your little bear to surgery. And tried to tell me her little bear was going to have a liver transplant. And I said, oh, you're both going to have one. And she said, no, just the bear, you know. But anyway, we sent the family out the waiting room, took that little girl back to surgery, and put that child to sleep. And I will tell you guys that 16-hour liver transplant did not go well. We almost lost that baby a couple times due to blood loss and stuff. I have never seen a team of people pull together like we pulled together for that baby that night. And 16 hours later, she went up to her room. We're really not too much hope at all, I got to tell you guys. And, you know, she lost a tremendous amount of blood. And, you know, we just really said some prayers on that one, I got to tell you. And I became obsessed with this child, and I had to see her again. And we have a rule at UCLA. You know, I get involved with these transplant patients. And when the organs come from, we cannot tell them. It's best not to see them after surgery. Now, let me tell everybody in this room here this morning that I'm real good at breaking rules now, aren't I? And I thought, I'm just going to go up and see how she's doing. I had to see her again, you guys. And that's exactly what I did when she was 6 days post-op from that transplant. I went to that little girl's room. I opened the door to that child's room. And you guys, I could not believe it was in front of my face. My God, the power of God, the power of God. Here was this little baby girl. It was the first time she'd been through surgery. She was jumping down her crib. She had diapers hanging around her knees. She had that bear in one arm, and she put band-aids all over this bear. He had band-aids on his eyes, his ears, his nose, and I mean everywhere. She had a baby bottle on the other hand. It was the first time she'd been through surgery. That whole room full of people were in there, and you guys, I stood in that hall, and I just bawled is what I did. And something caught my eye out of the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, was sitting on a kid's dresser. Now, if you think I'm going to stay out of that room, you're out of your mind. I didn't care if I got fired. And I was in that room like a flash. And I said to the mother, I said, whose book is that? She said, well, that's my book. You know, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So is my husband. Her sponsor was there. His sponsor was there. And I tell you guys, those people drove 500 miles to be with this family. They were not from the L.A. area. And they showed me one more time what this deal was all about. It's about love and service, and that's all that it's about. And I was impressed, let me tell you. And I went to the mother and I said, how long have you been sober? And she said, 5 years today. And I thought, oh my God, her little girl for the first time, what a fabulous, fabulous birthday present and stuff. And I went to this little girl and she looked at me and she stopped dead in her tracks and she said, go away, I'm not sick anymore. And I was standing in my scrub clothes and scared the hell out of her is what it did. And I said, well, I didn't come up here to hurt you. I just came up to see how you're doing. And you guys, she gave me her little bear. And she said, you take him home and take care of him. He is so sick, he needs a nurse to take care of him. And I told the mother, I said, I cannot take that little girl's bear home. My God, that bear went through that kid's liver transplant. You need to keep it as a memento. We had it in a plastic bag by her little head the entire surgery, I got to tell you. She said, Karen, she wants you to have it. Please take it. She's got 50 bears in this room. And she didn't even have 50 bears in that room. And I felt like a fool walking down the hall with that bear. But I will tell you guys, that bear is my most prized possession in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, I need to reciprocate here. I obviously was not prepared for a birthday party. And I remember something that was in my pocket. I was 7 years sober when this happened. And I was 5 years, I had a medallion for 5 years of sobriety in my pocket. And the reason I had that in my pocket is because there's narcotic keys next to that medallion. And I don't need to tell anybody in this room here this morning that when I open those narcotic cupboards sometimes, that my eyes light up like firecrackers, I can tell you. And I can grab on that and remember the hell I'm coming from. And that medallion was from my sponsor, and he gave me that when I was 5 years sober. In Nebraska, we give medallions to people and so forth. But anyway, you know, I had hung on that medallion for a long, long time, way too long, let me tell you. And we say in Alcoholics Anonymous that you've got to give it away to keep it. You've got to give it away. And I knew I had found the woman to give my five-year medallion to, and I walked over to her and I gave it to her. And you know, and she said, Karen, I can't take that. My God, Clancy gave you that. And I said, no, I want you to have it. And I really, really meant that, you guys. That's what you guys have done for me. And the nurses got wind of all this. We got a cake for the mother, and we celebrated her 5 years of sobriety. And I got to tell you guys, it was one of the most fabulous days of my entire life. And I could have missed the whole damn thing if I hadn't been taught to do something by my sponsor. Answer the phone when it rings, you know. I wonder how many times I have not answered that phone and many, many things I've missed in my life. If I thought about that too long, I'd get crazier in hell, I got to tell you. But, you know, anyway, you know, people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them than this to the end, that my great blessings may never spawn me, forever do this, you know, like our 12th edition says, long form. So that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, that I may forever live in faithful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And there's more reasons than that for me. You're the ones that walk me when nobody else would walk with me. You held my hand when nobody else would hold my hand. And you tell me that you love me. And I need you as desperate this morning as I needed you in 1982. You've taught me how to live. You've taught me how to love. You've taught me how to keep my pants up and all those things. And I don't know those things very well. But I'll tell you the one thing that I do with 200% absolute perfection, and that is this, that I love you running the whole world. And it's truly a story from an alcoholic hell I cannot even describe. I have truly been given, just like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, I have truly been given the keys to the kingdom. And I'm going to say one more thing and I'm going to sit down here. It's been one hell of a walk from Skid Row, Nebraska, to where I stand in St. Louis, Missouri today, and I think that but for the grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous, that I would have missed it all. Thank you for having me, and thank you for my life.